Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Well, it's not exactly AEW Dynamite. It's AEW Collision, and I'm not exactly Wade Keller. I'm Mike McMahon, but that's okay. We're here. It's the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. I'm filling in for Wade tonight after AEW Collision, an eventful collision, as most of them have been lately. And I am joined tonight by David Bryant, who writes the Hits and Misses column for AEW Collision over at pwtorch.com. David, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing? It's an honor to be here for the probably the least watched episode of Collision ever.
Yeah. No, thanks for being on board with me tonight as we host this one. And obviously, it was a big angle at the end of the show with Edge and Edge. I'm going to call him Edge probably forever, just because I'm so used to it. But with Adam Copeland and Luchasaurus and Nick Wayne, Christian on a video screen, but an angle to further their feud, which was sparked the other night. What did you think of the show closing angle?
I think it was good. There were things I liked, things I didn't like. It got off to a slow start. And I think Edge would probably benefit from more scripting. Right at the beginning, you know, he referenced Jim Ross. And I like Jim Ross, and I'm glad that he pointed that out. But it felt like he was trying to find his comfort zone, and we only had about 10 minutes left in the show. So that could have been done better. But once he got rolling, I thought he did a really good job. You know, I liked that he explained why he wanted to return to AEW. I think that's important because we all know he left, you know, a fairly large company. The last time, you know, we saw him, he was on top. So we'd need a good motivation to do that. I wish that he had maybe used that motivation as an excuse for why he was actually at that pay-per-view at that exact moment. Wade Keller mentioned in either a post show or in everything with Rich Fan that it would behoove people who come in as surprise acts like that to explain their backstage presence by simply saying, I was there looking to negotiate a contract. You know, I had this reason to want to be there, in this case, Christian. And I think that would have really helped. I'm going to greatly enjoy calling Nick Wayne a Persian cat. That is wonderful. I'm surprised. I know, it's great. And for copyright reasons, I'll be calling Edge Precipice. So, but I liked it. I know why he did it, because I know he's trying to get that heel heat by not coming out. But it would have been so cool if Edge had come out in person and not been on the monitor. I mean, Christian. I think already working in different names. Then Christian had come out and addressed them live instead of doing it on the monitor because of the connection they had on Dynamite. It felt electric between the two of them. And I think that's what's going to really help to sell the feud. And it would also help you not wonder why Tony Khan pays random crew members to follow wrestlers around everywhere, but not to fix the audio system.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting not having him come out and plug that, okay, he'll respond to him on Wednesday, which, I mean, it's fine. They were plugging towards the Wednesday show. It did almost feel like, and I'm interested in hearing what it sounded like in the building, but it did kind of feel like there was a breath of disappointment there from the crowd when it's like, no, I'm not going to come out, and you're not going to hear from me until Wednesday. And then I think the angle kind of brought it back a little bit, I mean, at least for the live crowd. It certainly kind of piqued their interest again when you have some heat there happening at the very end of the show after what probably felt like a little bit of a disappointment. If you think you're going to get Christian, you think you're going to get this interaction, and then you don't.
I understand their disappointment. You know, I had Christian at the I went to go to see Collision when it came to the Greensboro Coliseum, and I made a list of the people I hoped to see, the top five people, and Christian was at the top of that list. He is on fire right now. Like, he needs, people need to walk around with fire extinguishers behind him just in case he catches anybody else on fire. He is just lighting up the whole room every time he's in it. I love the Bond villain shtick. Slightly miffed that Edge, even though it was unintentional and he would never read my stuff, managed to steal like 100% of my gimmick on the hits and misses column, which I referred to. I make James Bond jokes about Christian and his Shark Tanks every week. And it's just so fun. So fun to buy into what feels like a career redefining masterpiece of a character. You know, so many people, when they are this late in their career, they just want to coast on what they've done before. And it would be so easy for Christian to come in and be like, we're just going to try and do, you know, the Reeks of Awesomeness character, or we're just going to stick with the peeps from TNA or something. And instead, he came in, and when things weren't going exactly as planned, he said, I'm going to take the initiative. I'm going to fix it. I'm going to sit down and find a villainous character that everybody out there can find at least one thing to hate about. Because that's what's great about his character. It doesn't matter who you hate, if it's that person at work who food pushes, if it's that person who is just chomping gum at a funeral, whatever it is, just a tiny sliver of it in Christian. And that's the perfect heel, because they work as an avatar for you to put your frustrations and your angers onto them. And Christian is this avatar for everything we despise about a human being in society. And yet he somehow comes off like he actually believes the things he says in the funerals he crashes.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this dynamic plays out, too, I think, over the long run between him and Adam Copeland. I'm going to be better about it. I promise myself I'm going to be better about it. But I still call Danielson Daniel Bryan. It's just, it's so hard sometimes. And I don't even know I'm doing it. Sometimes you just get confused. Although it's easier, I think, with Danielson, because he was at least Bryan Danielson before he was Daniel Bryan with Edge. Like, I know he's always been Adam Copeland, but from a wrestling standpoint, he's always been Edge. Like, there was never an Adam Copeland, the wrestler, before a week ago. But it's going to be interesting, this dynamic that plays out between the two of them, because obviously there was great chemistry when they were a team. Undeniable, right? And I think they're going to have great chemistry as opponents. It seems that way so far. It doesn't always guarantee that you're going to have the same great chemistry as opponents that you had as teammates. It doesn't always guarantee it, it seems like, but in this case, at least so far, and we're, you know, one promo and one kind of promo and a half in, if you count tonight, where Christian was up on the screen. But I think there is something there. Just you've got guys that are telling a real story, which helps too. Like, we know that there's a personal history between those two. It's not like this is contrived. It's not something that they're coming up with, you know, just for the sake of a wrestling angle. There's a real history between these two individuals, and we know that. And the fact that they can draw off of that, and I think it's going to make for a really good storytelling dynamic between the two of them as they move ahead and move forward with this story.
I know that I'm not a caller. Can I ask you a question, though? Because you have a great wrestling
mind. Yeah.
Do you think this might actually, in a roundabout way, hurt Christian's character, given he is on such a roll, but they also don't want to tarnish Adam Copeland having just signed him?
That's very interesting. I hadn't thought about it like that, but that's very interesting, because you do want to kind of keep Christian hot, right? You don't want to diminish where he's at, because you could certainly make the argument right now that he's one of, if not maybe the top heel in the company, because there's other heels in the company that, you know, sometimes they're baby faces and sometimes they're heels, and they play back and forth. Christian doesn't play back and forth at all. Christian doesn't want to be – he's not out there being cute with some cute promo lines trying to, you know, get laughs and cheers every once in a while. He's 100% heel, and he's probably the best one at that in the company right now. That makes me think he can probably survive it, even if he doesn't come out of this on the other end victorious over Adam Copeland, which I don't think he will be. I think he's going to be able to survive it because that persona that he has, you know, I could see him doing like the real old school move and just denying it, being like, I didn't lose. What are you talking about? you know, or whatever pulls him away from Adam Copeland at the end of this, you know, if he keeps doing what he's doing right now, he's on another level, probably you said it earlier, at a different level than he was at any given point in his career. So I think he's going to be able to come out on the side of this okay. And you hope that this story, this feud, it's going to be prominently featured. You know, it's Adam Copeland's first feud in the company. It's not like it's not going to take a back seat to anything. So I would hope that this actually pulls him up even more and gets him closer to that top of the card. You know, it's just I can see him denying losing the same way we have watched him claim to be the TNT champion all this time when he really wasn't. You know, I can kind of see that character going down that sort of road.
You know, but I think you just sold me on the idea. I would love watching him deny losing and brag about his fantastic victory over Edge. Precipice, Adam Copeland. And you know what? I'm on board with you. It is going to be so hard to get these names right. But I know that's actually a great idea because that's part of what made him so frustrating. You know, it's like those people on Twitter that you really shouldn't interact with because they're not operating in good faith to begin with. But you just sort of had the urge to want to leave that comment. But it's even more frustrating with Christian because he doesn't have a comment section. It's just watching him gaslight you every week, and the people around him. What did you think of the Nick Wayne promo package? Because I have strong opinions on it, but I wanted to know what you thought.
So I have reservations about Nick Wayne going down this road to begin with. I don't know that he's going to be able to pull off a heel character. I thought what they tried to do tonight with the video package was a good first attempt, but like I just don't know if an 18-year-old kid with his sort of look is going to be able to pull it off. Like it just, he seems too babyface to me. Aligned with Christian could help because like we've talked about it. Christian's been so good. You know, he might get that heel rub just being affiliated with Christian, but I have my concerns. I don't know how you feel about it, but I don't know. But I also felt the same way about Jungle Boy, too. It's just like the guy looks like such a baby. He has this baby face look to him. Like, I don't know if he could pull it off. But what did you think of it?
I do worry about his in-ring style. I've not really seen a lot of him wrestling since he's done this. So I don't know how he's going to overcome it because you're right. He has, you know, he has a twink body. He is a Persian cat. They're usually very thin. And he's younger. You want to cheer for the young, up-and-coming, you know, go-getter kind of guy. My issue with it, I do want to say his facial expressions. His facial expressions have been on point since he's took over this role. That has been good. And it's not easy, and that's encouraging, given that he's 18, that he's able to know the facial cues and has obviously probably worked in a mirror on what he's doing. And the delivery of his lines have been good. What I thought about the video package was I had several thoughts, which is he really loves that panda sweater. He wore that last week. He wore that in the promo video, and then he wore it out tonight too. I give him
I give him
credit for not being ashamed to be an outfit repeater. But the second thought, probably less important, maybe, I don't know, is he needed a better reason than that video package gave him, in my opinion. You know, he is a good talker in that package, you know, and you could tell that. But he needs a better reason. People act with reason. Nobody ever just does something. And people rarely do something that drastic for a reason that doesn't feel drastic. And his reasoning of, you weren't there for me, just it feels so generic. Because he has a built-in reason. That would be so perfect for him to do this. His reason should be, you forgave A.R. Fox after he tried to share and tape me in my own garage.
Gotcha.
He just shook his hand, and we're fine with that. How can you be my friend? That's, I think that's such a better reason, and it's just sitting there on the table, and they walked away from it. That was kind of what bothered me with the person cap from the video.
Yeah. No, I completely agree with you, too, because the you weren't there for me aspect, that which is what they're playing into now, that existed before he debuted. I mean, that was always there. So what changed, you know, from when you first came into the company and you know, they were essentially best friends, and Darby Allin talked about how he knew his dad, and there was a history there between them. That if the frustration is you weren't there for me, that existed when he arrived in the company. So why wasn't there a frustration point with that when he first came in? What changed? I agree with you. I think it should be you forgave the guy that, you know, savagely beat me to the point where, who knows, it could have ended my career. Like, there's an obvious story you can tell there. You're absolutely right. I think that's the better story. It gives Nick Wayne more of a reason. It doesn't make him look – it's too simple, this you weren't there for me story, when, again, like, that existed 3 months ago. And he didn't have a problem with it then, but he does now. It starts to lack – it lacks a little bit of sense there. I do. I like what you proposed better, because I think there – is a specific turning point in the story they're telling with those two characters, and it's a, like you said, it's a reason for why Nick Wayne's feelings towards Darby Allin may have changed. The story they're telling now, you sit there and go, well, what's the when did your feeling towards Darby change, and what prompted it? And there really isn't a moment that did with the version they're telling now, because the A.R. Fox, the Darby forgiving A.R. Fox has not really been brought up yet. Maybe it will be in the future. But other than that, if it's just you weren't there for me, that's always existed. So what made Nick Wayne's feelings towards that change, that has never really been explained. So, and that's where I think sometimes, and it's not just an AEW thing, other companies do it too. WWE does it all the time. Sometimes you've got the perfect thing sitting right in front of you, but you're so busy trying to book, you know, 3 hours of television, or excuse me, 5 hours of television a week, that it can be hard to see the common sense version of the story that's kind of right in front of your face sometimes.
I feel like this is where Tony Khan, by the way, amen to everything you just said. I feel like this, what you pointed out at the end there, how booking 5 hours of television is a daunting task, and it's hard to truly, no matter if you work 80 hours a week, if you work more hours a week than in a week, it is really hard to keep up with all of that. This is where Tony Khan would benefit so greatly from reaching out and delegating tasks. I promoted drag pageants for many years at the national level, the National Entertainer of the Year, and at the state level, the North Carolina Entertainer of the Year, which, you know, we had dozens of contestants that we worked for, city preliminaries. We had travel, and I got to see so many states during the process of it. But I spent the first 3 or 4 years trying to do everything myself. I have a little bit of OCD, and I wanted it to all be perfect. And it actually, now that I look back and on the tapes, I retired from that in 2019. And I look back on the tapes and the DVDs of the pageants that we put on and the events, and you can tell a difference in improvement when I started to delegate tasks around that year 4 or 5. Which is the second, I did it for 10 years. So when I started to finally delegate tasks, I thought I was creating perfection because I was handling everything. But the truth is, I was just blind to the imperfections that I wasn't creating because I didn't have third parties that could explain to me why things weren't working. And I was trying to see so much that all I could see was this big picture. I could not get close enough to the television set of my life to see the dead pixel in the corner that I needed to fix and was driving everyone else crazy, and I didn't know it was there. And that is what I think Tony Khan is experiencing right now. He sees the product, and he sees a product created by someone who loves it. He's putting on something he loves. It's not a bad product. And I do not think Tony Khan is a bad leader. I actually think he is an amazing leader, given what he has accomplished on his own at this point, pretty much, given, you know, he said that he takes on all of the responsibilities, not to mention what he's doing with Fulham and what he's doing in Jacksonville with the Jaguars. I think he is blinded to it because we don't see our mistakes as close up as others do. And I think that if he would, I know writers are sometimes a dirty word in professional wrestling, but you know, I studied screenwriting at the University of North Carolina School of the Arts, and so maybe I'm biased towards them. But if he would sit down with writers, and there are writers in the wrestling industry. Mick Foley's a best-selling, he's not just a best-selling memoirist, he's also a best-selling novelist. He's on 2 novels. And sit down with them and say, you know, what could I do to make this story work? What's the outline? What's the bubble graph that I can do? You know, there's a software out there called Scrivener that writers use. It's not even expensive, to help plot out the points of their novels. And I know it wasn't made for this, but maybe Tony Khan should get a copy and plot out the points of his company and look over those things when he's on his jet, when he's, you know, at a Jaguar game, looking down at his phone. Just look at those things and ask how he can better rearrange those plot points and how he can capitalize on every aspect of every story to make it mean the most, make the most sense, and draw in the most viewers to make him the most money.
Yeah, I do think that's important. Even if it's just, you know, somebody who can handle quality control, almost. Read over a script when the show's done and written and make sure it makes sense with what happened on the last show and the show before that. Because you do, it's very easy, I think, when you're in that process, especially when you're doing it week to week and doing 5 hours of television on a weekly basis, it's very easy to lose some of those details and lose sight of what we did 2 weeks ago. And I think where it becomes really clear for me are some of the assumptions that I think are made by Tony that, you know, he thinks when a new wrestler debuts from, you know, I'll use Kota Ibushi as an example. A new wrestler debuts from Japan, a very well-known wrestler, obviously. But I'm sure if there's 800,000 or 900,000 people watching Dynamite and 500,000 or 600,000 people watching Collision, there's a percentage of that audience that doesn't really know who Kota Ibushi is. Maybe they've heard of him, but, you know, they don't really know who he is. And I think sometimes you saw it when he debuted at Blood and Guts. There was assumptions made that just everybody knows. Like, everybody watching knows who he is and knows his history. But I don't think that that's necessarily true. Same thing with the Eddie Kingston and Claudio feud. all the, I mean, they've alluded to the fact, and they've talked about the fact that they have had a rough history between the two of them, and these guys have not liked each other for a long time. They've never really said why. they've pointed out that there's issues, but they've never really gone into detail on what those issues are or why. And I think, again, sometimes it's just assumed that people know, well, they feuded in Ring of Honor. And, well, not everybody knows that. And, you know, I give them credit for, I think on Wednesday, Excalibur during the Edge and Christian segment at the very end of the show, I think it was as Christian was coming to the ring, said, you know, if some of our younger viewers aren't aware, you know, these guys have a long history with each other. They came up in the business with each other, and of course, were one of the best tag teams ever. Like, it was brief. It was 5, 6, 7 seconds, whatever it was, but it was very, very short, but it at least explained what was happening. And what I kind of found amusing about it is they were explaining something that is probably more known than some of the other little, you know, smaller stuff that I've been talking about. But I think they need to do more of that, and I think they also need to have – so there's, if there's someone, whether it's a writer or whether it's, you know, just someone that has a creative background who can follow along and almost take that step back. Because like you said, it's going to be harder for Tony to see it because he's on the front line every day, and, you know, there's bullets flying all over the place, and who's hurt and who's this, and this one's out, and maybe this one's travel got messed up. You know, he's dealing with things flying in a million different directions. So if there's someone who can stand a few feet behind and step a little bit further back, see that bigger picture a little bit, and read through a script on, if it's a collision, a Thursday, and say, hey, you know what, Tony, what if we change this little thing because this doesn't really make sense with what happened here? And I think that would help him. And that is delegating something where I don't think it needs Tony to feel like he's completely lost control. But I agree with you. I think he needs – I think there needs to be some assistance there because it's got to be difficult for him to pay attention to those minute details when everything's being thrown his way. The booking, the what buildings are we going to run, I'm negotiating with TNT and Warner Brothers Discovery and whoever else. And we got this show coming up on pay-per-view. Like, he's dealing with running the business and running the creative, and that on top of having other jobs, like, on top of his responsibilities with other organizations, it actually worries me because it's got to be difficult on him. Like, at some point, I don't want to see this happen. Like, at some point, you sit there and you go, you may end up in the hospital. Like, you need to sleep at some point. And I think that help, even if it's a little bit of help where he doesn't have to lose control, because like you said, I think I'm the same way. I think we all are. We're kind of inherently control freaks, right? But I think if he had some help, it would not only help the product on television, I think it would help him. Just personally, like, I think it would give him those moments throughout the day to breathe a little bit and maybe see some of these things that right now he's having trouble seeing.
I think you articulated it probably better than I did there by really focusing on the benefits to him personally, you know, his health. You know, you talk about it. And it's right that attention is a finite thing. And even though, you know, I had attention deficit disorder and I had a strong feeling that Tony Khan has attention abundance disorder, but it's still going to run out at some point. You know, I hear stories about Vince McMahon working out at 4 in the morning, and they're always relayed as if it's some kind of Spartacus moment. It's so heroic to push your body like that. But it's actually not. Every time I hear that story, I think, okay, but how much better could the product have been the next day if he'd gotten a full night's sleep? And Tony Khan is he's the conductor of the orchestra. He is in charge. If he gets out of time, everything else is going to be out of time. He can't also be first chair. He can't also be in the back with the drums. He's got to be focusing on leading it. And I guess it's frustrating because I think he is a good leader. I think he is a kind, compassionate person. I don't know him personally, but based on his media scrums and then you put your best face forward there, but just based on the way the wrestlers have reacted to him, he seems kind and compassionate and not at all like a black hole where dreams got to die. So I wish that he could get just a small thing, somebody that's there to work on all of the little micros while he works on the macro area. And he could see so much benefit because his product is good. It is good. I know there are the people that are rightfully both companies, because both companies are putting out great products. But I know there are trolls who will say, oh, it's horrible. And they're the ones that always the 2% in the polls who say something contrarian. But his product, if you look at it, those matches are so good. They are incredible. The wrestlers he has are talented, extraordinarily so. He has some of the best promos in the business right now. Miro, Christian, Moxley, these are people who could talk circles around a timeshare salesman and somehow come out selling him the timeshare. It's absolutely tragic that he has all of that, and it could be over a million viewers, certainly. 1.3, 1.4, you know, when CM Punk came in, that those very first few nights, he was able to hit those numbers. So those people are aware that AEW definitely exists. There was over 5 million views on Edge's return within a week on YouTube. So if he could fix just these micro problems, I feel like he could company into the stratosphere. Bad Eric TNA. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I don't think he's far off. Like, it doesn't, there is definitely something there, even with the, you know, with college football starting back up, like Collision. I know they took a big hit last week, but at the very beginning, when a month ago, when they had a lot more Collision on Saturday, a lot more competition, excuse me, on Saturdays, Collision didn't take a huge hit right away. And that was at the same time that they lost Punk, too. So it seems like there is something there. And like you said, you point to some of those other metrics, and there's, if you put the right things in place, there's a lot of interest there.
Absolutely. And that core base, he's got like 300,000 people in this country with no, based on the Nielsen ratings, who will watch anything he puts out. They're the people that watch Dark Elevation on YouTube. I love them because I wrote the reports of that for a long time, but they are that hardcore base. And he doesn't need to worry about losing them, most likely. They are there for the matches, and I don't think he's ever going to do anything to hamper the quality of the matches. It's the casual fans who are just there for the story. And you brought up an interesting point about Excalibur pointing out the history of Christian and Precipice. And I noted that when it happened too, because my boyfriend is not a... He'd never seen professional wrestling before I started shoving it down his throat. And he's 20. And so didn't live through, you know, all of that era. And I wanted him to have a big reaction to Edge's debut at WrestleDream. And so I surreptitiously put in Edge's theme song, when we were listening to theme songs, and I pointed out you think you know me, or now you think you know him, but I pointed out that line. I made sure that I showed him video clips of Edge's entrances, And I never told him, you know, Edge is debuting. I wouldn't do that. But, boy, it got a huge reaction. He was floored when it happened. And he didn't watch all of their, what's it, 12 reigns? All of their tag title reigns. But he felt that emotion because he'd been plugged in to what that emotion was. But not everybody is going to take the time to sit their wife down or, you know, to sit their friend down and be like, can you watch these YouTube videos before we get to the actual show so you'll fully understand it? Ibushi's a great example. They didn't just have a built-in storyline from New Japan. They had a fantastic storyline from New Japan they could have used. The Golden Lover storyline is one of the best that they produced in 15 years. I mean, I'm not saying it's the best, but it's good. And they could have told a very compelling story, even if they wanted to go a different direction with what the Golden Lovers were insinuating. They could have still used all of that to tell a strong and compelling story about why Kenny Omega cared so much about Ibushi. And then have Don Callis drive a screwdriver through the head of Ibushi in that painting. If they had done that, the reaction from the crowd of seeing that screwdriver go through Ibushi's head would have been at least two times, if not three or four times, what it was. Because that would have been a climactic turning point moment in a story that they had been hearing. It would have been someone knocking over the first domino in a row of dominoes they took the time to set up. And I think, and I'm so glad you brought that up, because I would not have thought to. But that is a perfect example of what we're talking about here.
Yeah, no, absolutely. By the way, if anyone is listening live and you do want to join us, the number to call, 347-215-8558, 347-215-8558. There's a bunch of other developments that happened on this show as well, which we haven't even talked about yet. We spent a lot of time on Edge and Christian. Again, Edge. I'm going to keep making that mistake. But there was other big developments on the show, including what led off the show, David, which was new tag team champions being crowned. We haven't even touched on this yet. But Ricky Starks and Big Bill, they're the new AEW tag team champions. They beat FTR and beat them relatively quickly. What did you think of the way this show opened and the crowning of new tag team champions?
I was flabbergasted and not happy, but I'm a huge fan of FTR. If anyone does read my columns or my past reports, I've called them artists. I've called them a level of genius that transcends mere wrestling, because they can make a great match out of anything, anything. I mean, if it was just Booker says, we're going to have Marco Stunt squash the two of you in 2 minutes, it would still somehow be the best 2 minutes of wrestling I've seen two tag wrestlers put on in a year. They would somehow pull that out of their butts. And I was floored that they lost, but then I thought back, and especially that I was floored that they lost in 4 minutes and 42 seconds, which you mentioned is so short, especially for them. And then I thought back to WrestleDream, and, you know, they broke Mark's – oh, my gosh, I'm having a stroke. I can't think of the name. Mark's last name, Wrist, from Aussie Open. And
– oh, yeah.
And I imagine it had hurt Vader was injured as well, especially given how he was used in this match, you know, being so quickly knocked off the apron, rolling over Dr. Samson being there. They scare away Dr. Samson. We finally discovered that the announce tables can break. And even when it broke, it looked like he winced. And I'm wondering, you know, is it a rib injury? You know, that he's suffering something like that? If that's the case, as much as I loathe the idea of FTR losing these belts at any point, much less at 7 p.m. on a Saturday, against Fastlane. I understand it, and if you ask me to pick a team, and you told me that Big Bill, he needs to change his name, and Ricky Starks were options, I might have picked them. And even though it was probably by necessity, I think it was serendipitous that the match had to be so short. Because if you're going to put over a heel team with somebody as good in the mic as Ricky Starks, somebody with the size and the presence of Big Bill, you want to put them over big. And beating FTR is big. But beating them in 4 minutes and 42 seconds, that is gargantuan.
Yeah, it was a surprise. And it made me think the same thing. There's got to be something else going on here. There's got to be an injury. There's got to be something. Because it was not just a win for Ricky Starks and Big Bill. Like you said, it was a defining win. It was a dominant win. Under 5 minutes. And like also, at a point in the show where we'll see what the quarter hours look like on Tuesday, whenever it's or what the holiday, maybe it'll be a day later. But I would imagine that may be one of the lowest viewed quarter hours of the night, just because it is not a point in the night where the show's typically on. If you did not remember that the show started an hour earlier tonight, you may not have watched that segment. And it was an odd time to do it, unless there is something else at play here. But also, if you're forced to go into it, and if you're forced to not only take the belts off of FTR, but you decide you're going to do it in this type of fashion, I hope that it would mean they're going to put a lot into Ricky Starks and Big Bill. And they did. I mean, they had a promo later on in the show, which was good. So I'm getting the impression, and it would make sense to me, that they have decided that, okay, it's not just that they're going to hold the titles until we decide what we're going to do with them. It's they're going to hold the titles, and we're going to put some steam behind them here, because they beat a tag team that has been, arguably, the premier tag team in the company for the last several months. Because even the Bucks have been in and out. They've been doing six-man stuff. You know, FTR have really defined that division for the last 4 to 5 months, and now you've put this relatively new team over them in a quick and dominant fashion. I would hope this means that they're really going to invest in those two as a tag team, and not only continue to build the world tag team titles, but also build that unit as a team as well. Because you know, it was a dominant, and it felt like a dominant and defining victory for that team.
I agree. I'm glad they gave them the promo afterwards, FTR is not just, in my opinion, and I know I kind of stand, wait till we get a Tony Storm, I kind of fanboy over certain wrestlers, but I would say I'm an unabashed mark, but I don't consider that to be an insult. Why would I be insulted to be a fan of something? I think FTR just, I'm stumbling over words right now because I cannot find the words to describe the magnitude of the impact that I feel like FTR has had in the tag team division, not just in AEW, but in tag team wrestling worldwide in the past 2 to 3 years. I feel like they have done in 2 to 3 years the kinds of things people strive to do for their entire careers and still fail to do. And beating them, that should be, and I think it will be, if they're smart, huge. And Starks is a guy to get behind. Look at how good his performances were with Danielson, even on short notice. Both of those were 4+ stars. 4 stars. I don't give out star ratings that much or anything like that, but you know, they were at that caliber. I said that I truly thought that as great as, and I still think it, as great as Sabre and Danielson was, possibly a match of the year contender, that it would have been wiser for AEW's long-term business strategy to put Ricky Starks versus Danielson in the Texas Death Match or the Strap Match on WrestleDream, because Zack Sabre Jr. is going to be disappearing the next week. But Ricky's going to be there every week. And Ricky has a chance to be, as much as people compare him to The Rock and Jeff calls him the Pebble, he has the chance to be Rock adjacent in how popular he is. And I would hope that they would see that and want to treat him that way in AEW so he doesn't try to go to WWE or want to go to WWE. I heard, can we give Fastlane spoilers tonight? Should we not do that?
Yeah. It's probably. I think, from the podcast, you know, people will be listening to this tomorrow. So, yeah. If you don't want to hear about tune out for the next 30 seconds if you don't.
Yeah. They had Jade Cargill pop up. And I think that was smart. Because that is such a flex to get someone young and fresh from AEW that had had 60 wins, that it had a multitude of investment already put into them. And they chose to do it on a night they knew Collision was happening. And I think that's what AEW should want to prevent when they look at Ricky Starks. They should look at him and say, future MJF, future Pillar. This guy has a look. He can talk. He can bring it in the ring. And speaking of talk, and Big Bill should let him talk for him and turn this team into what Enzo and Cass could have been had everything worked out just right.
Yeah, and it did feel that way. Like it felt like a new beginning for those guys. And Ricky Starks has been excellent for a while. But Big Bill, I mean, Big Bill's kind of had his ups and downs. I mean, like you said, I would hope that they at some point address the name because it's not great. there's better options, I'm sure. You can just go with his actual name. Like, why Big Bill? Just Bill, whatever his last name is. I forget. But that would be fine with me. Like, just use an actual name. Big Bill feels like a Vince McMahon name. That's something Vince would come up with. But, yeah, it just I hope that they move forward with them in a positive direction and find a way to continue to feature a really talented guy in Ricky Starks. It almost, their dynamic reminds me a little bit, I mean, this is going back like 30 years, but it reminds me of like that Diesel Shawn Michaels dynamic, even just the way that they work a little bit, because Ricky Starks is kind of the smaller, full of himself, Shawn Michaels in this era type character, and then you've got Big Bill, who's the big, strong, 7-foot monster who kind of works like Diesel and Kevin Nash. Like there's an element there where I think they draw on that team a little bit, but just it's not completely overt in the way that they do it, but just when you watch them, the way that they work their matches, like it's a lot of the same way that Diesel and Shawn did 1995, right? So 28 years ago, whatever it was. But it's that big man, little man dynamic, and the smaller guys got a lot of personality behind him, and Ricky Starks clearly does. So I think there's something there. Like, I know they maybe haven't been as heavily featured. Ricky Starks has, but as a singles, you know, they haven't really been heavily featured as a tag team very much at all, but there's, I don't know, there's just, there's some, I don't even know really how to describe it yet, but I feel like there's something there with those two where they can be a really dynamic tag team, two guys that work different styles, have different personalities too, but play off of each other really well.
I love that analogy, and I wish I could add more to the Diesel HBK analogy, but I've only experienced it through videotapes, but I have experienced has been very good, and I very 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 comparable to what you're saying, and now it makes me want to go back. Yeah, I want to go back and watch some of that and compare that, because I definitely like the vibe we're giving the Big Bill, who, you're right, his name is only slightly better than Bob. But at least Bob's the guy versus Bob, so that's more interesting. just, yeah, I don't know what name generator they got that from, but it's broken because I've used name generators for books I've written, and they're better than that. So I don't know what's happening with that. I think I said when Ricky Starks became his manager, first order of business, any name but Bill. Just any name. Randomly pick one. It'll be better. It'll be more memorable. William is more memorable than Bill.
You know, so. 100%, yeah.
But anyway, I'll get hung up on that. What did you think of the Tony Storm segment?
Go back and forth, because the video packages that have been playing over the last several weeks with Tony Storm, I've liked some of them, and I've disliked some of them. I think they're a good idea. I think it's the most characters she's shown since she's been there, and that's not necessarily her fault. I mean, it's just the way that the show has been booked, like she's finally kind of getting this opportunity to stand on her own 2 feet and show some character. I didn't like how sometimes they veer off into comedy. Like, I think she's really good at playing the character she's playing now in a serious way. I like it. I think, obviously, she needed to get the win in that match, which she did. But it was, I still think there's a lot to determine with where she's going to, what direction she's going to go in with this character. I think they see something in it though. And they obviously see something in her. She's been pushed strongly for a while. But I think that whether it's Tony, or I know Jimmy Jacobs has been helping out, I think, with some of the booking as well. I don't know if this was something that he's kind of put together, or if it's something that's Tony that's put together. But whoever is helping with the creative on these segments with her clearly thinks that this can take her to another level, because they're putting a ton of time into it, which is more than can be said about some of the other acts that they have. I mean, they're so overfilled with talent, and they seem to be putting a lot of time into what she's doing. So clearly they think that this is going to get her to the next level. What do you think of it?
I love it almost unequivocally. Almost. I do agree that I wish she would, when you talk about the comedy, I actually like the comedy to a point. I think when she's wrestling her matches, she should do an Orange Cassidy, which is she keeps that comedy up until she's punched in the face, and then she's back to sanity until the bell rings.
Yeah.
Although I don't mind her doing the Norma Desmond face pose framing I from the end of the Sunset Boulevard, the I'm ready for my close-up, Mr. DeMille moment, it's so obvious she studied this work, too. I love that she studied this, because she is so dead on. If anyone is listening to this, I challenge them, go to YouTube and Google Glenn Close one look and watch Glenn Close's portrayal of Norma Desmond. And you will see at least 50% of Tony Storm in that. And it's getting over. Tony Storm has not only had the highest-selling women's T-shirt for about a month, she has had she was top five of all T-shirts last week. 2 weeks ago, she was top three. And the only T-shirts ahead of her were two T-shirts for Adam Cole and MJF.
Wow, I didn't realize that. That's amazing.
And, yeah, I think that's what they see in her. It's the shirt that – it's the ones, the black and white, the hint of red shirt. And
yeah,
I've always thought that promoters should go by the T-shirt test. If you're selling a lot of T-shirts, you've already gotten somebody who wants to invest money into a character. They're investing $29.99 for a very – expensive T-shirt, and if they're willing to pay that, once you've gotten a little bit of their money, they're likely willing to give you more money for that character. And I will often scroll through and just look at other T-shirts that are up there, and sometimes it jives, but sometimes I see T-shirts and I'm like, this should be getting more. If the fans like it, and at the end of the day, the fans pay the bills, if the fans like it that much, push it. She's gotten over What is left of gay Twitter that Elon Musk is not scaring away, she's gotten over tremendously. People are making memes of her. I know I'm one of them. They, RJ City, the charisma between the two of them, I wish RJ City would be her manager. Like, just, you know, hire him to be her manager and her agent and her acting agent, and then keep coming to him every week asking him why she doesn't have acting work that week, and have him tell her every single week, because I'm not an agent, and have her forget that 10 minutes later. It would just be great watching that. I don't want her to be ridiculous in the sense that, in the sense of like the oddities were in the 90s. I want her to be crazy in the way that Mick Foley was in the 90s. In the way that you're a little scared she might injure somebody in that ring. She is so crazy. Like, she wants this so bad. And I love the match with Kira Hogan. Like, I think that Hogan is a great talent, and she came in. I was really excited for her. I feel like she has definitely been underused in the company, and I don't think many people are fans of women's wrestling would argue against that. But when she pinned Kira Hogan, I was not against her pinning Hogan. When she pinned her, at least there was more capital to be gleaned from that pin. And that is where it comes back to setting up all those dominoes. If Tony Khan had invested more capital in the Hogan character, setting up the dominoes for that pin to mean something, he could have then transferred that capital to the bank account of Tony Storm. And it would have paid off. And it's just little things like that. But I think Tony's doing great. She's got her own little Timeless Tony section over there with a sign, and I enjoyed that at the end she noticed them, and just as the camera's kind of pulling away, she just leans over the ropes and points to them with all the flair of a Meryl Streep. And I have this feeling like next week she's going to offer free acting lessons to Kate Blanchett or something, and I can't wait to see what it is. It feels unique. It does feel funny. But I don't think it's like Danhausen funny. Maybe it will go that way, and maybe I will be mistaken. I am a very palatable person. But I think that it's the Orange Cassidy funny. It's the funny that allows you to go, that's nice to see outside the ring. But I believe that this woman can be a champion. And I believe she shouldn't have been a two-time interim champion. That's very unfortunate. She should have been a two-time AEW champion and probably still holding that title. Because Toni Storm, if you put Toni Storm's face on a billboard and somebody is driving down the road and they see a face that looks like that, that is that symmetrical, the teeth that light, that looks both athletic and pretty, they're going to rubberneck. They're going to notice. It's why you hire people that look like that to sell advertisement, to sell cigarettes and cool candles or whatever on the side of the street in billboards. She has that it factor without even talking. And when she talks and she moves, she is clearly just so charismatic. And I know I sound like I'm fanboying because I absolutely am. But I think other people are too. If you look up Toni Storm on Twitter, you see the reactions to it, and people are living. And maybe some of it's too meta, you know, not meta in the sense of professional wrestling, in the sense of filmmaking. You know, there are a lot of little references. I felt like the opening to her entrance reminded me of the silent film Metropolis, you know, and it kind of goes into later films, and there's a bit of Monty Dearest in what she is doing with, you know, John Crawford. There is, you know, a lot of Norma Desmond in there. You know, there's Betty Davis in just all of these nuances that look like she's paid so much attention to it, and she's all in on it. And when somebody is all in on what they're selling, it makes it so much easier to buy it. I don't want to buy something from somebody who's lukewarm about it. If someone comes up to me and says, I've got this diamond ring. I mean, it's okay. You know, I don't know. It's a little bit small, but it's not too big, but I guess it's all right. I'm much less likely than if it's somebody that comes up to me and tells me, I've got a diamond ring. It is the brightest, the shiniest, the most spectacular, and the best fit for your partner's finger that you can find in the business. That person makes the sale. You know, that's what Don West was so good at back in P&A. I would watch the old videos that he would put on their website selling playing cards. He could sell P&A. Yeah, again, not to belabor the point, but P&A cards. And I know he can because I bought two. He could sell P&A cards that old line individually to sheer passion and believing in them alone. And that's what Toni Storm is doing with the character. She is selling this to me. And this, after maybe Christian, Roman Reigns, and Cody Rhodes, is probably my favorite thing happening in professional wrestling right now.
She's come a long way in the last year, too. Because the other thing about this character is it's so much different than what she was doing 6 months ago. And that's why I think it's coming from her. I think you're right. You know, I think it is coming from her, and it's not something that she was given and told, hey, we're going to try this. This really, it feels like it's probably an idea that she had that the company was willing to go with, not an idea the company had that she's trying to figure out. Because very quickly, this seems like a natural fit for her. Like, it doesn't feel like it's something that she's trying to figure out as she goes. It feels like something she's had figured out since the first vignette.
It does. It really does. I think the first vignette, she threw a purse. And I only remember that because I rewatched that vignette multiple times. There's so many lines I can't get out of my head from this already. That, like, me and my boyfriend will repeat to each other random moments, such as, you know, chin up, tits out, and look out for the shoes. And then Renee's like, I'm sorry, what? And then a shoe just goes flying at her head. And another one is Ruby Soho just trying to reassure Soraya that everything is fine. Toni Storm's out in the parking lot half naked, throwing shoes at birds. And she wasn't in that promo, and she stole the promo. That's a talent to still scenes you're not in. And I really hope that they will see a way to putting this title on her. And I hope that Sheeta does not win on Tuesday, because I would like the person she takes this title off of to be Soraya. I think it will mean a lot more for her character because of their history.
I'm in total agreement there. I was just going to say, I'm in complete agreement there. If she wins, beating Soraya for the title is how it should go, because there's been a story there that's being told for months. That's one where there's a long-term storytelling component where you can really have that pay off, especially in front of the right crowd. I think that would be a big moment. That's a moment that they should... If it's not on pay-per-view, they should main event a Dynamite or a Collision with it, probably a Dynamite, and give it time to breathe. Like, don't have her winning the belt happen at 9:59 p.m. with, you know, 30 seconds left, and, all right, we're going to run down what's coming up on Rampage and Collision, and we go off the air. No, like, have that match end at 9:57 and give her 2 minutes in the ring where she's awarded. Like, I'd want to see her be awarded the belt, and those first couple of moments with the belt again, and maybe a shot of Soraya going back up the ramp, trying to figure out what happened. Like, that, when that does happen, it should absolutely be against Soraya. It should absolutely feel like a moment. It shouldn't feel like something that just happens. I hope that they shoot it in such a way where she has time, that moment has time to breathe when it does happen.
You could not be more correct. Absolutely. those post-match moments really can make characters. I feel like that's one reason I like Bianca Nicole so much, was, you know, early on when she had her moment and her celebrations just felt so authentic. Like, for a split second, she thought it was real. It felt that way. And it connects you to her. And I'm a Bianca fan to this day because of that. I love women's wrestling in general, so I talk about that a lot. But you know, the other moments that have truly meant something after Cassidy's loss at All Out, I wish they'd spent more time on him because the crowd was chanting for him while he just sat hunched in the ring, and they only spent about a minute before they went off the air, almost like they didn't fully expect it to happen. But if they'd given that loss more time to breathe, even though it was a loss, it would have given Orange Cassidy more of a boost until they forgot he existed next week.
Yeah, 100%. That's something where, you know, I'd like to see AEW just in general do better with that. And I know it's hard because you're, again, you're trying to time off these shows and you're trying to cram a lot in. You've got a big talent roster, but there's been a few where it feels like, oh, this big thing happens, and then 30 seconds later, let's go backstage to see what's coming up next. And it's like, no, I want that moment to breathe a little bit more. I want to soak that in. Like, I don't want the announcers to step over it. Like, I want almost kind of like at WrestleDream when Edge comes out, and the announcers aren't talking over it. They're silent, and the music's playing, and they're coming to the ring, and Edge is coming to the ring. Like, it was... You want that moment to breathe. You don't want it to feel like it's being stepped on. And that's sometimes where they do. They end up rushing things every once in a while. Not all the time. And I think it's just a product of we've only got so much time and we've got so many people in these matches. We want these matches to go 15, 20 minutes, especially the big ones. And sometimes you feel like you're running out of time. But, yeah, I wish it just in general, as a rule, they would allow those moments to breathe a little bit more.
I don't think they fully realize how much they're leaving on the table by not letting it breathe. But because I think they focus so much on the match that they forget that if it's just a match, there's real fighting out there we can watch. It's the characters we love.
Yeah.
We show up for the characters, we fall in love with their stories, and the matches are the climaxes to their stories. They're the end of the chapter before we turn the page. They're the cliffhanger. They're the explosion at, well, actually, I'm not sure if I can make that Tommy Dreamer analogy on here, but they are, you know, they're after the build-up, they're making the people pop. That's the nicest way to put Tommy Dreamer's analogy, but it's a very good analogy that he used to make about how you would tell the story and how the match would be. But it doesn't, his analogy doesn't work if you don't have the foreplay beforehand to make it mean anything. And I'm so glad you brought that up because you're so right on that. And it's a little thing, but little things add up. So many seemingly insignificant things end up being significant when you have a bevy of them. One horse, you can dodge out of the way. A stampede, you're face down on the ground and hoping not to die. And so little things can really add up the bigger and bigger they get.
Absolutely. Yep. A couple of other things we should hit on quickly before, because we are over an hour already. Wow. But no, this has been a great conversation. But a couple of things we should hit on quickly before we wrap up. There was a lot of things that happened on the show. We haven't even talked, again, we're over an hour in and haven't even brought up the Bryan Danielson Kyle Fletcher match, which was, from a work rate standpoint, to me, probably the best match of the night. And again, Bryan Danielson out there working with a younger talent and helping establish someone who could be a name for the future. Like Kyle Fletcher, going into the show, I wouldn't have told you that Kyle Fletcher would have, in my mind, he's going to have a singles run at some point. He comes out of this match tonight with Bryan Danielson, and I say, yeah, he can absolutely have a singles run at some point. You know, I don't know that you want to completely break up Aussie Open just yet, but what did you think of that Danielson-Fletcher match? Because I thought Danielson did a lot to make Fletcher look competitive and on the same level as Danielson, which just can do immeasurable things for him in the future.
I liked it. It was a fantastic 16-minute match. It was, like, I agree, it was the best match of the night, far and away. I wish Fletcher had won. Now that's being a stickler because it's Bryan Danielson, and standing in the ring with him is a big enough deal. And he did make him look extremely strong. And I love the unique pin. It felt like it didn't take a ton of way because of how pinned he got him. He got him just like, so down. I hope they are going somewhere with this. I mean, that's as close as you can get to basically Bryan Danielson picking up a microphone and saying, I endorse you in public. And so I would take his advice, Danielson's advice. He's been around the block. He knows what he's talking about. And if his tag team partner, Mark Davis, has got the broken wrist, well, now's a good time to run with that. Don't do the Dante Martin thing where, you know, you build him up, he got a world title shot that nobody remembers and ended so early they threw in a bonus match. Don't damage him like that. Actually use him if you're going to, because you need the future. You need the future on now. That is one reason I like seeing the Persian Cat close out the show. Whether he can handle it or not, and I don't know, we will find out, and there's a good chance he might not be able to. But whether he can or not, we saw an 18-year-old, we saw the future standing tall at the end of Collision tonight. And I think that's important on a night when they're going up against WWE, who has a depth roster the size of the trench of young talent that is hungry and ready to step up, and Roman Reigns just decided he's wrestled his last match. So I like Kyle Fletcher. My partner absolutely loves Kyle Fletcher. He loves both of Aussie Open, and really just, you know, and Kyle Fletcher being 24. By the way, did you know that his partner is only 33?
No.
Like, I know. Those have been very long years for him. But he's paid to look in the ring fantastically. And these guys, they are premier wrestlers. Even though they are, there's a huge age gap there. There's even a style gap a little bit. But I'm so glad they found each other because their styles complement, and they have put on amazing matches. And not just in AEW. I mean, in fact, the best matches haven't been in AEW, even though they had a fantastic one, you know, against FTR. It really feels like they sometimes Wheeler Yuta, the younger talent, if that makes any sense. They believe in Wheeler Yuta. And in a way, joining Blackpool Combat Club is like the best and worst thing to happen to Wheeler Yuta. Like, it's the best thing because he's on TV all the time now, and the worst thing because he's always losing. And I don't want that to be Fletcher's fate. Because I think he is talented enough, good enough, he has a look, and he can go on the mic, make a decision, and run with it. So, yeah. That's my thoughts.
Speaking of the mic, too.
No,
absolutely. Speaking of mic work, Jay White cuts another promo on MJF and as they're working towards their world title program, which it kind of unofficially kicked off on Wednesday when White cut that first promo, or I guess it kicked off the week before, but when White cut the first promo on Wednesday, now he cuts another promo on MJF tonight. What do you think of the way that they've built this feud so far in leading up to this MJF Jay White match? I'm thrilled that MJF's next obstacle is going to be a world title match. It's kind of weird, you know, when you look at the way it's played out, and you've got two pay-per-views in a row where your world champion is defending a tag team championship. The world title has been defended on the last two pay-per-views. Granted, one of them was a week after he had just defended it, but still. So now they're building towards this world title match with Jay White and MJF, and I'll be honest with you, I wasn't quite sure what I was going to think of it when they started it, but I think Jay White has delivered in these first two promos, and they've taken positive steps towards that match.
I think it's been great. I think that it's very poignant, and it says a lot that you are surprised that the world champion is going to defend his world championship at a major pay-per-view. Because I kind of am too, but that should not be the case. I think that this is
yeah, <I know.
laughs> one of the... It makes... I'm trying to keep it, my answer shorter. I could go on a long tangent about that. But but White is a great choice for an opponent for MJF. I'm not sure how I feel about the angle. There is a belt-stealing epidemic in AEW. I would be gluing belts to my waist at this point. I don't know. There's got to be like a law or a policy or something in the company that if you steal somebody else's property on national television, and we definitely see it happen, that you don't get to wrestle for X, Y, and Z amount of time. And especially if you return it to them in a bag after you shattered it. Like, just, I've never understood the idea of the belt stealing. Even when one of my faves, Ruby Soho, did it, I was still like, I kind of wish they hadn't had one of my faves do that, rather than be, you know, happy that she did. And I wish that they would keep it rare. If they wanted this, if this was the first time it had happened, that would be, you know, that would be shocking. But it literally just happened in a recent TBS title feud. So it's not exactly new. And I really hope they are aware of that, have MJF address that, and make the feud about so much more. And about more than just even just wanting to fight. I think they should feud about their stylistic differences. And I almost feel like, in a way, Jay White is pulling it in that direction with his promos. You know? It's a really good... I did not like the Eliminator dig. Because I'm not a fan of taking digs at the other companies, especially as a fan of both companies. I'm kind of like, hey, I watch that. So
yeah,
I would leave that out. But other than that, I loved it. It was great.
Yeah, I think they're doing a really good job of building that feud. And again, like you said, I'm happy that the world champion is going to be defending his world title on a pay-per-view. Feels weird to say that, but I'm glad that it's happening. I had made the argument to somebody earlier in the week that, you know, I get what they're trying to do. I understand that, you know, they're trying to make the other titles bigger, and Tony can say at this point, well, you know, look at the TNT Championship main event at our last pay-per-view and the International Championship main event at the pay-per-view before that, and, you know, these titles are almost becoming as important as the world title. I know what they're trying to do. My argument has always been, when that has been brought up, that should not be the goal. Like, the world title should absolutely feel bigger than the other two, because there's only one world champion, and that should be the top of the mountain. Like, mountains don't have three tops. There's one. So, you know, they're building the prestige of the other two titles, and there's nothing wrong with that, right? But you do need to remember that your world championship should be the most coveted belt championship in your company. And, you know, I just sometimes I think that got lost with this Cole MJF storyline that they did over the summer, with Cole out. And who knows? I don't even know if this was the original plan. Like, if Cole wasn't hurt, would they be doing another tag title match at Full Gear and MJF would still not be defending the world title? I don't know. But I'm glad that the world championship is going to get some focus again on a major pay-per-view and more, I would assume, main event this pay-per-view, because I think it needs it. You know, it's been really the last time there was a top-tier world title match was the end of August, which by the time we get to Full Gear is going to be over 2 months, really, between notable world title defenses. It's too long of a period. You know, you should. I know it was like the old WWF rule back in the day that the champion had to defend their title every 30 days, but I think it's a good rule. Like, I think that every 30 days the champion should have to defend their title. So I'm glad that they're finally getting back to the point where that is going to be the major focus of the television show, and it can be the major, at least the major focus of MJF. going into the next pay-per-view.
Absolutely, 100%. What 100%? What did you think of the? I mentioned it. What did you think of the Ruby Soho promo?
So I'll be honest with you. The Ruby Soho promo, I was in the middle. My dog needed medicine. My dog has. We have a very old dog, and he needed medicine. And I missed it because I was trying to get him to take his medicine. He's very difficult about it. He doesn't like doing it. So I had to. I was in the middle of rolling up his pills and roast beef so that he would. He would take his medicine, so I didn't see it. But what did you think of the Ruby Soho promo?
Well, I thought it was great on the mic. I liked the things that she addressed specifically about not being able to be in the title match, why she wasn't there. And I loved her when she talked about Renee's eyes, and you have them wear glasses, you can see. I'm a fan of... You know, Ruby Soho, there's a video on my Twitter, I admit, of me praying to a Ruby Soho picture that she'll get a match. But I feel like, normal stuff you find on Twitter. I feel like she's got to be one of, not of all the wrestlers, but of the women, she's got to be one of the most underrated women in AEW. And she, because she's got a look, she can talk. She can wrestle. I mean, she's not Charlotte Flair, but she's definitely not bad. I mean, she's pretty good. And she can wrestle. She got a look. She can talk. She's fun to watch as both a heel and a face. And she's smart in the ring. I noticed, when she went heel, she changed her in-ring style. You know, we haven't seen a Deadly Nightshade since she turned heel. Not one. And that's smart. Because it gets over with the crowd. It gets a big pop when she does it. And I just wish that she were rewarded more. She just feels like the consummate bridesmaid, and I don't want her whole career to be like that. But I like the promo.
Yeah, no, me too. I think I agree with you. It does feel like she's been the bridesmaid so far. Both in WWE and in AEW. She had a brief moment there right at the very beginning when she first came in where, she was kind of like the shiny new toy, and they really focused on her a lot, and then it felt like she slid into the background a little bit. But she's too talented, I agree. I think at some point you want to make her – she should have a run as the centerpiece of that division at some point.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, David. Well, hey, this has been a lot of fun. Before we go, where else can people find you? I'm sorry, go ahead.
We have a title match we didn't talk about. Do you want to mention the Iron Savages versus the Acclaimed, or is that just still all day?
Oh, no, that's right. There's two more things here on the list, that one and the Eddie Kingston match. Sorry, I forgot about both of those.
It's okay. Which one do you want to talk so much. I can't help it.
Me too. Which one do you want to start with?
Well, the Iron Savages one. What did you think of it?
So, I like what they're doing with all these guys, to be honest with you. I've been a fan for a while. I think that there's some things that just kind of naturally feel like they're coming together. And that group in particular, I think some people may not realize how long they have been. Sorry, something's playing here in the background. I think some people don't realize how long they have been around, because they've kind of been in the background a little bit. Like they've been on Rampage a lot, and if you're not watching Rampage, and not everybody does, if you're not watching Rampage, you're not seeing the fact that, well, these guys are still on TV. Like they've kind of been on TV every week. It feels like they've, from what I've seen from that group as a whole, it feels like they have gain more confidence, especially over like the last 4 months, to the point where now they're ready for a big TV program. Where, like, I'll be honest with you, over the summer it felt like, okay, these guys are on the rise, but they got to figure something out. Like they needed to feel more comfortable. I that's the only way I can explain it. It felt like they needed to be a little more comfortable in the characters and in what they were doing. But that has really come into its own, I think, over the last month or so. And they seem ready for this. Like, I feel like if they tried this in June or July, I don't know if if that group would be ready for this type of television time, but now they feel like they are. Like I feel like they're ready for what they've put in front of them here.
I agree. I never thought I covered them in Dark Elevation a lot when they were heels, and they were so good at being just smarmy little crapsicles that I never thought that we would end up. That I would never thought that like professional frat boys and a Fountain of Youth alchemist would somehow become so popular with the fans. They're chanting for Daddy Ass. They're scissoring in the audience, which never sounds right, but it's still kind of funny. And they have the only belts in the company capable of apparently having sex, maybe, I don't know. But I think it's wild how good they are without having to do some of the craziest spots that you see out there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just been one of those natural things that has kind of come together.
It really has. I never thought that Billy Gunn would be having a career renaissance. And is he in his 60s now? I think he's in his 60s. 59 at least. It's impressive.
Very close.
It's impressive as heck.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
he's very close. He's got to be.
Is he? Oh. In the Iron Savages, I wish that they'd built them up more. That's maybe all I was going to say. And that they would stop having them do promos to the ring, or somebody should just ask them to stop using their skydiving voice while they're themselves. That would be hurt them.
I hear you. And then the other match was not...
and the ass eating, that's a whole thing. I don't understand that.
Yeah. the other match we haven't hit on was Eddie Kingston against Commander for the ROH World title. Eddie Kingston won this match to retain in about 10 minutes. It was, a hard-hitting match, kind of a typical Eddie Kingston match. They shook hands after the match, so they observed the code of honor. What did you think of this one?
I thought it was good. I'll try to keep it short. I thought it was a great match. Eddie Kingston is one of my favorite wrestlers. I went on like a 10-minute rant about him at Black Park's Wrestling Night in America a couple of weeks back. So I will keep it short and won't go on a rant. This match had exactly the right amount of ass eating, which is zero. And Commander looks like he defies gravity, literally.
Yeah.
So the mix of styles, it was unique to see Eddie step up so well to that challenge. And I liked the match. It was a good match. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like there's more they can do there with Commander, too. I don't know. They're going to have to refresh him because he's lost a lot on TV, but there is talent there. Like you said, there's some of the stuff he does, some of those acrobatic stuff, such as, like, you know, the human body's not supposed to fly like that. So I think that... I feel like they will use him in a bigger role at some point in the future. I just don't know how you refresh him because most of the times they've had him on TV, he's lost to big stars. Like he's losing. There's no shame in losing to Eddie Kingston. But, you know, I hope that he doesn't kind of get stuck where, you know, Dolph Ziggler got stuck, where he's really good at what he does. And he's going to get to a point where you're like, wow, we can push this guy a little more stronger. We can use this guy in different roles, but he's been beaten so much on TV, no one's going to take him seriously as a real, like, top level guy. They're either going to have to refresh his character completely or, you know, start to program him in a different way so that that doesn't happen.
Oh, absolutely. They can. He is very, very talented. He's clearly been bitten by a radioactive spider, and he jumps exactly like a gymnast. Like, I love how he folds his arms in when he's jumping. You can tell that he's trained at that. A lot of wrestlers, they're just flailing their arms around in the air like they have two windmills on each side of their bodies, and he is jumping just perfectly poised. It's incredibly impressive. Some of his spots do take a while to set up, and I know that I can see them being reluctant to want to push him to the top until that's settled, but then again, I don't know, a lot of their acts kind of angry. But I agree with you. I think he has a lot of potential. They just need to find a way to tap into that well.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the challenge, right? Trying to figure out how to take a guy from one spot, which is kind of a lower mid-card spot, and start to elevate him without, you know, without making it feel forced. There's a natural progression. There's definitely a natural way in which they can do it, because he's a younger guy and he's super talented. So hopefully at some point, it's little stuff. You know, at some point, put him in a match on Rampage or on Collision against someone at the same level of the card that he's at, so that he can start to pick up some wins, so he's not losing all the time to bigger stars.
Exactly. It's not complicated. I mean, it's not, it takes time, it takes investment, but it's not that complicated to tell a story if you sit down and you really think about, what if I believe in this guy, what can I do to make everybody else believe in him too? So.
Well, David, where else can people find you on the internet, social media? Where else can they find you? I know they can read your stuff at The Torch, but plug away. Where else can people find you on the World Wide Web?
My Twitter account is at I Am David Bryant. It's the one with the picture of me juggling fire in the avatar. My Instagram account is I Am David Bryant. The latest post there is of me playing some guitar. And my Threads account is, that's account is I Am David Bryant. And the latest post on there is nothing because it's Threads. And that's pretty much it. That's very good. Thank you so much for having me, by the way. Thank you. It's great to talk to a great wrestling mind. You know, there's a reason why your last name is McMahon, and I really appreciate the opportunity to host this with you.
Yeah, no relation that I know of, but we'll see. Thanks for coming on, too, and being a co-host tonight, filling in for Wade. This was a lot of fun. I hope everybody enjoyed the show. You can find me on Twitter at Torch McMahon, and of course check out all the stuff over at pwtorch.com and become a VIP member. Become a VIP member if you haven't done so already. Thanks again, David, for hosting tonight. Thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye.
Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show listeners, how would you like to hear episodes of this show and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast at Podcast One and the PW Torch Livecast lineup, all without commercials and with ads and plugs removed? Well, you can do that with the VIP membership. Go VIP and all 4 episodes of the Wade Keller shows and all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast are ad-free and plug-free for VIP members. Not only that, but you get a ton of VIP exclusive podcasts, such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan 4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan 4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.